This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living. I'm T. Xiaoyik, and we are doing Embryology 101 today. So a bit of history. Louise Joy Brown was the first baby to be conceived through IVF, in vitro fertilization, back in July 25th, 1978. And that date is now celebrated as World Embryologist Day every year. So we'll be taking a look at the history and development of the field of embryology, and we will celebrate the unsung heroes of IVF, the embryologists. And we have one in the studio with us today, Lok Mei Kew. She will be taking us through a day in the life of an embryologist, pretty much, and how she looks at embryos and sees the life within, as opposed to just a bunch of cells, as I think the rest of us may think of it. If you have any questions, you can call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon, May. How are you today?
Hi, good afternoon. Very good, thank you.
So let's start at the very beginning, almost the very beginning of life itself, the embryo. Could you explain exactly what an embryo is?
An embryo is the product of combination between a human sperm and a human egg, and we grow them after 2 to 3 days. And once they have grown into two cells from one cell, then we call it an embryo. Before an embryo, we call it a gamete. That is the product of a fertilization.
Okay. And then just very briefly, within the process of fertilization, what happens after the embryo is formed?
So in the beginning, when we fertilize the egg with a sperm, then if it gets fertilized, it's called a gamete. Now, then we give them probably another 20 hours or so. Then if it's a healthy gamete, it will grow into an embryo. And from one cell, it would develop into two cells, from 2 to 4, 4 to 8, and so on and so forth. Now, after the 5th day of fertilization, we call it a blastocyst. And the blastocyst will implant in the uterus, and from there, implantation happens, and then the baby will be formed.
Okay. And so what you do, you are an embryologist. Mm-hmm. Can you explain what this field of embryology actually looks at?
Yeah. So embryologist is actually a fertility specialist, actually. More often, we are known as the clinical scientist. We are not medical doctors, but our job is to create the most healthy and viable embryos for the doctors to place it in the woman's womb, creating a high chance of implantation for the couple.
Okay. Is there a brief history of the field of embryology for us to understand?
Oh, yes. Infertility happens way before England's King Henry VIII, you know. He and his six wives, you would thought that he would have a lot of children. But in between he and the six wives, there were many miscarriages, stillborns, and infancy death. So infertility already happened by then, but people did not know what causes a pregnancy. So from then until 1934, I would say, that was the first breakthrough. And then we'll bring it to 1960s and 70s, where there are many advances of fertility treatment. And that opened up lots of possibilities. And then many have actually overlooked in 1973, the first IVF pregnancy in humans was actually by an Australian group from University of Monash in Melbourne.
All right.
But unfortunately, that pregnancy ended up as a miscarriage.
Right.
So many have actually overlooked that. So we bring it back to 1978, and that was the first successful IVF baby.
All right. And so how would you differentiate the role of an embryologist from that of the fertility? I mean, I know you said that an embryologist is a fertility specialist, but your role is looking at the science of it.
That's right.
How is that distinct from what the fertility doctor does?
Well, a fertility doctor, he is actually the first person a couple comes to look for, trying to understand why they are infertile. So the doctor looks at the physiology conditions of the couple, looking at the hormonal conditions of the couple, and then offer them the most suitable fertility option. And he is also very much involved in ovarian stimulation, very much involved in egg collection, as well as embryo transfer. Mm-hmm. Now, between egg collection and embryo transfer, mm-hmm. that's where the embryologists come in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And like you said earlier, an embryologist looks at creating the embryo to mm-hmm. be implanted. What exactly is that process?
That process is very, very technical. We start the day by preparing all the, I don't know what it's called culture media. And then we use this culture media to grow the cells. So we mix the sperm and the eggs together. And then from there, we will make sure that the environment that the embryos are growing is optimal. And then what we do is we do a lot of troubleshooting as well. Yeah, because sometimes things go wrong mm-hmm. or sometimes fertilization does not happen.
Right.
And we have to troubleshoot and find out why it didn't happen. Is it because of the embryologist herself or the environment or an equipment that gone malfunctioned?
So for a couple, how many embryos are you looking at nurturing?
Right. We nurture as many eggs a woman has.
Right.
So we can nurture from one minimum until probably I've done like over 40 embryos for one couple.
Right.
Okay. So that's a lot. Mm-hmm. And in a day-to-day job, we don't only look after one couple. Mm-hmm. We look after 10, 20. Mm. And that's a lot to track, keep track of. So yeah, it's.
Okay. All right. But it's an interesting career to mm-hmm. pursue. You're quite behind the scenes, aren't
That's
you?
Right.
Why did you decide you wanted to be an embryologist?
My first calling came back in 2001 when I stumbled upon a job advertisement looking for trainee embryologists in one of the local hospitals. And I didn't know what embryologist was all about, so I did a lot of research. And what really caught my eye was is a job title with the word, with the letters IST behind. So it's pretty professional, in my opinion, back then, because I was young, you see. So when I did a lot of research, I fell in love with the nature of the whole profession.
Okay. Yeah. So what kind of educational qualifications do you need?
Well, a person has to have a good grasp of knowledge in biological sciences. So you can come in with your most basic degree in biological sciences. And then from there, you will be trained on the job for about two to three years or 2 to 4 years. And if you feel that you would like to pursue further, there's a master's degree in clinical embryology.
Okay.
Yeah, that's optional, but now it's actually something that we really need.
Have you seen the profession or the field develop very much in Malaysia?
Yes, it has actually.
What kind of developments would you say has marked you know, the growth of the field?
Well, Malaysia now has kind of like followed the trend or advances in the European countries very closely now. We are very capable of actually employing the technology, newest technology and advances over here. Previously, I would say 10 years ago, we wouldn't be able to freeze embryos properly, but now we can. Another thing would be the genetic testing that we are doing, as well as other things.
Yeah. Okay. And what kind of skills would you say are really crucial in this job?
You know, embryology is a really, it's a funny job. You would need to have talent, but many people do not have that talent. So I believe hard work comes before talent. And the skills that you would need is probably a very good hand-eye coordination.
Mm.
And you must be very meticulous in your work because, like I said, you have to keep track of 10 to 20 patients in a day.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to be really, really have a good sense of organization as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
You say talent, hard work is more important, but what is the talent that's...
Being very patient. Attention to details. Not everybody has that kind of quality. In my experience, it comes true with very high intensity training.
So you can learn
you can.
That level of
yes.
attention and, yeah. and patience?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is there a typical work day or work process, in the day, in the course of your job?
You wake up as early as 6 a.m. and you start work there.
Right.
You don't, then the whole process of working probably finishes at about 5. So that's about 11 hours of work in a day. And weekends, public holidays, we're there too. We're practically the embryo's first nanny and first babysitter.
Well, I guess that's because you have to take care of it
all the time. Yes, we have to. Yeah. It's like a baby.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, babies that needs constant care.
Okay. Mm. But in the process of nurturing, let's say, however number of embryos for a particular couple, what exactly do you need to do to take care of them and to help them grow?
You need to keep track of them. So they need to be, they need to be fed, you know, in inverted commas, fed with new food because they need food to grow.
Mm-hmm.
So every day you would need to change the environment that they are cultured in.
Mm-hmm.
You keep track of their growth every day to make sure that they are either slow in development or fast in development. And you need to check on their growth previously every day to make sure of that.
Mm.
Because if you don't, at the end of the day, you wouldn't know which embryo is actually a healthy growing embryo or an unhealthy growing embryo because you don't do the checks in between.
Okay.
So it's a constant job for an embryologist.
Okay. We'll look at that when we come back. The idea of what is a healthy embryo, what is not, what are the factors that will determine that journey, how do you select the right ones to be implanted?
Yeah,
right? Sure. Yeah. We are doing a 101 on embryology today with Lokmei Kew, who's an embryologist. On the 25th of July is actually World Embryologists Day. So we're, kind of commemorating this day a little bit in advance. We'll be looking at the sort of how do you look at these embryos and be able to support that process of growing it and fertilization beyond that point. We'll be right back after this quick break on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. In the studio with me today, Lokmei Kew, an embryologist, and we're doing a 101 on embryology, understanding what is the field of embryology and how it is used in IVF, in vitro fertilization, to help couples who cannot conceive. So the role of an embryologist is very specific, looking at creating and nurturing the embryos in the lab that we will then be implanted in the uterus when the time is right. So, May, can you walk us through a typical fertility treatment process when a couple first comes in to see the fertility specialist?
When a couple comes in and see a fertility specialist, the fertility specialist would ask a bunch of questions detailing on their fertility history, when they got married and how long have they been trying, and were there any issues, were there any tests done? So if these are not done, then the fertility specialist would order some of the investigations. Like, first of all, for the men, is a semen analysis.
Mm-hmm.
So then for the female, an ultrasound scan on the pelvic abdominal area, just to check on the ovaries, check on any underlying problems in the uterus, to see whether she has enough eggs to support her a whole reproductive life.
Mm-hmm.
And then if all these tests are done, and we will probably try a very simple treatment first before we go through IVF, because IVF is the ultimate treatment for couples. So the doctor will advise a simpler one called IUI, which is intrauterine insemination. It's basically just getting the woman to get some pills and grow some eggs, ovulate the eggs, and then the man will come in, give us a semen sample. And you know, a semen sample, it contains live sperm, dead sperm, you know, some other stuff inside there. So for an embryologist, we would have to clean those unwanted things in sample.
Right.
And we will enhance whatever that we want with a good live sperm.
Okay.
Healthy ones, fast-moving ones, and these will be given to the doctor, and the doctor will insert this population of good, healthy sperm into the woman's uterus.
And cleaning up the sperm. Okay.
Correctly. Mm. And this is the whole thing called artificial insemination.
That's IUI. Okay.
And this is by chance, yeah? Mm. And the success rate is not as great as IVF.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are only enhancing the sperm. We're not looking at the eggs. Mm. We are not sure whether the eggs really ovulated or not.
Okay.
You see?
All right. Mm. So for couples who need IVF, what it would be the, very briefly, what's the process there?
All right. So the couple comes in and say, I want to start an IVF. And the doctor say, good. So why don't you get yourself some medications? So these medications are self-administered injections. They are hormone injections. So these injections are supposed to recruit eggs in the ovaries and then grow them to a certain size and maturity.
Mm-hmm.
So after about 10 to 12 days of self-administering injections, then we would give a final injection to finally mature the eggs. And then 36 hours later, we go through a process called egg collection.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is where the woman has to be sedated because we have to retrieve the eggs via vaginally using laparoscopy. Ultrasound probe.
Okay, all right.
Ultrasound probe.
Okay.
Yes, and then these eggs will be passed on to the embryologist and we would have to prepare the eggs for fertilization.
Mm.
So now, fertilization has got two types. One is the conventional IVF, where we're just mixing the sperm and eggs in a petri dish, praying and hoping that fertilization will happen.
Mm-hmm.
But there are circumstances where sperm isn't that great, and we need to do another form of fertilization called ICSI, which basically just means injection of a single sperm into a single egg.
Mm.
Now, this only will be done if the man has got poor sperm quality.
Mm.
Yeah, so the fertilization for ICSI is done by the embryologist.
Okay.
So we have more control on that.
Mm.
And the fertilization rate for an ICSI procedure has is higher than the conventional IVF.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. After that, it's really, really a really long, tedious work. But from there to do 5 days or 6 days later, then if there are any good embryos, we will pass these embryos to the doctor and the doctor will place it in the woman's womb.
Mm-hmm.
And if a patient has surplus embryos, which we don't need yet, then we will freeze them and put them in a tank.
Okay.
To a later, much later date.
Okay, all right.
And that's the whole process.
That's the, in a nutshell.
Yes.
But how do you decide, what do you look for to decide that an embryo is healthy enough to be implanted?
Yeah. So the number of cells has to be correct. If I'm going to transfer, let's say, a third-day embryo, three-day-old embryo, it needs to have 8 cells inside it. So if it has less than 8 cells or 6 cells or 4 cells, then I call this not suitable because they are slow in development.
Mm-hmm.
So if they are slow in development, the chances of it getting implanted will be lower.
Mm-hmm.
Because at each embryo transfer procedure, we want to transfer the best ones.
Yeah.
The other aspect that we look at is how well the cells are dividing.
Mm-hmm.
If the cells are dividing as a whole, meaning it doesn't have any fragments around it, then that's a very good quality embryo.
Okay.
But sometimes it has scattered, pieces of tissue around it.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's no good.
What can you do as the embryologist to sort of help the cells along at this stage? Is there anything that you can? Okay,
As an embryologist, we really need to stick to protocol, proven protocols. We cannot ever go sideways or cut corners or things like that. You know, just like my Dr. Prashant used to tell me, we are like, IVF is like McDonald's. You have certain protocols that you have to follow, and just like IVF is the same.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot divert for any of the protocols.
Okay.
That's one.
Okay.
Second of all, we must maintain sterility in the lab because any unwanted microorganisms like bacteria and such can deter an embryo from growing healthily.
Mm-hmm.
And then, the third one is the skills.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. That's so very important.
In all of this, and as you've said, the overarching quality for an embryologist is that attention to detail, so that very you're much. Able to do all this, follow yes. the protocols, maintain sterility, be really meticulous in the work that you're doing. How I can imagine that that would require a very rigorous training process before somebody who's just starting out can really be a full-fledged embryologist. I mean, what's that process of training and learning like?
It's intense. One word to summarize it all. And it's a very high intensity training. We can't expect a candidate to come in for the first month to know everything. As to my knowledge, a person needs to be trained at least 3 to 5 years before one can actually acknowledge that person to be really, really competent, because we're talking about human lives here. And you really have to ensure that whatever you do, it does not have any negative impact on the baby that's going to be born. A training is really, really intensive and very, very focused. And you're always, always on the microscope. And the focus and the attention span, sitting quietly in a chair, staring into a microscope, can be very, very disheartening for a young candidate who doesn't know the repercussions.
Okay. What do you see when you're sitting there for hours looking at cells on a slide. What do you see when you look at them?
What do I see? Nobody ever actually asked me that, but I see
going
a potential.
From couple, you're looking at hundreds of couples, at least, you know, in a year. What distinguishes one couple's cells from another couple's?
You can't. You can't. But just by looking at the cells, you can't distinguish them that these samples belong to couple A, these samples belong to couple B. All this comes from our very meticulous labeling of these samples on carriers, like we call them, like the petri dishes that we use, the test tubes that we use. We label them by, you know, couple A, couple B, so that we know these belong to couple A and couple B. So we recognize it by that labeling. Unless it shows very different things on the cells, like it has two heads of a sperm or things like that, or this couple has, sperm has got lots of double heads, and then we kind of know, oh my gosh, this couple's sperm sample is very, very different, very, very interesting. That's how you can remember. Otherwise, it's really going through by meticulous labeling of the petri dishes and the test tubes that we use in a lab. Therefore, mistakes are not allowed at all in the IVF lab.
Okay.
Because everything looks the same.
Yeah.
You know?
But you say that you see potential.
I see potential, yes. Each egg has the potential to grow into a healthy embryo and eventually a healthy baby.
So what are some of the options that can increase that potential, the increase the chances of a successful pregnancy? I understand there are some micro-manipulation procedures that can be done. Can you explain some of those?
There are micro-manipulations. So ICSI is one of them, where you inject a single sperm into a single egg. That's a micro-manipulation. The other one, I would say, would be the pre-implantation genetic testing, which involves the embryologist to excise some cells out of the embryo and passing these cells onto a platform to check for genetic or chromosome defects. So that is one type of micromanipulation.
Okay. On that note, we do have a question from Nini about whether any genetic testing is done for conditions like thalassemia, spinal muscular atrophy, Down syndrome, etc.
Yes. Like for thalassemia and muscular dystrophy, we call that pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, where we where the couple has to go through screening first by identifying what sort of mutation that they have. By identifying the type of two mutations, then we would be able to screen the embryos that has this kind of mutations, and we will take them out from our selection for transfer.
Okay. So, yeah. All right.
And for like for Down syndrome, it's more on the genetic screening. That means we look at the chromosome level. For thalassemia, we look at the gene level.
Right. Okay.
So it's very different.
Each one, depending on
the type.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And depending on how the condition develops, whether it's a genetic, chromosomal,
that's right,
and all that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Are there any risks associated with these micromanipulation procedures?
If you're talking about risk, yes, there is actually. A few risks to the woman especially, because she will be, you know, being administered with a lot of hormone injections. So one of the risks would be she can go crazy, you know.
Mm.
A lot of, not crazy, but a lot of mood swings.
All right. Yeah. Because of the hormones.
The hormones,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Then you have the what we call the ovarian hyperstimulation, because we would want to have more eggs. And more eggs means more hormones, and you can get into a shock.
Right.
If the doctor does not manage the woman properly.
Mm.
Another one would be multiple pregnancy, because people want to have the highest chance of pregnancy. So people tend to put in more than 2 embryos or 3 embryos to increase the chance. So if you have 3 embryos put in, 4 embryos put in, and if by chance all 4 embryos implant, you have
four.
So that is one of the risks.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. So where does your job end? After it has been passed on to the doctor for implantation?
No, it's never ending. My job doesn't end there, because after the embryos are passed to the doctor, there are surplus embryos, and these surplus embryos have to be frozen.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to put them into strict condition to stop the cells from aging.
Mm-hmm.
So practically put the embryos into a sleep mode.
Okay.
Yeah. From there, job isn't done, because months later, the woman decides to come back and probably have another child. And then we would have to wake these embryos up from their sleep.
Mm.
So it's always ongoing, and it stops until the couple says, I have enough.
Mm.
And then that's where the journey ends.
What do you do with those embryos?
Well, we don't throw them away, definitely, because these are the property of the couple. The couple needs to tell us what they want to do with the embryos. Sometimes the couples will say, I have enough. I would like to donate these to someone. But we don't really encourage embryo donation. But it's a case-to-case basis, and the couple needs to be assessed properly before we even offer this kind of services. And sometimes the couple say, okay, we can discard them. So what we'll do is we'll just take it out from the tank, and then we put it and let it die off.
Mm. But for couples who have embryos that are frozen, and they choose to have a second or a third child with those embryos, what is that process of reviving the embryos?
Thawing.
Okay.
Just thawing.
I'm sure it's not as simple as
It's not as simple as defrosting a chicken from the freezer.
Mm.
It has to go through a series of taking out cryoprotectants out from the cell and replace it back with water.
Right. Okay.
So in freezing, you are taking out water, and then you are replacing it with a cryoprotectant.
Mm-hmm.
That's the a type of chemical that we use to replace.
Mm-hmm.
So in thawing, we are reversing the process.
Mm. And will the quality of the embryos be maintained?
If the embryo is being frozen and thawed with proven protocols by a skilled embryologist and kept in proper conditions, an embryo has more than 90% chance of survival rate.
Mm. Mm. But is there a period beyond which you know that the quality will diminish after years or something like that?
No. You see, after the embryos are frozen, they are kept in the tank at negative 196 degrees.
Mm.
If the condition is being properly maintained and when we do the thawing procedure, it should not diminish.
Okay. We have in the studio with us today Lok Mei Kew, an embryologist. We are looking at the basics of embryology and understanding its role and processes in vitro fertilization, or IVF. When we come back, just a quick look at some advances in fertility treatment and fertility technology. What May hopes to see in the near future to make her job a little easier perhaps, or more precise. So stay tuned for that. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. We are talking about embryology today. It's almost like a 101 on embryology because the 25th of July is World Embryologist Day. So we have an embryologist in the studio to help us understand what exactly is this field when it comes to fertility treatment. And she's Luk Mei Kew is in the studio with us. She's been taking us through a very interesting look at sort of a day in the life of an embryologist, where an embryologist comes in within a fertility treatment process, and how I think what comes through me the most is the precision required to do your job, how meticulous you need to be in order to nurture the growth of each embryo. And to make sure that everything follows its protocols, a mistake is the last thing you want in this kind of process. Mm. But let's, take a crystal ball look into the future. Mm. What do you think will be some of the upcoming new developments in the area of fertility treatment? What are you looking forward to?
I think what I would like to see is to be able to assist more couples in having a complete family without a lot of micromanipulation, without disturbing the embryo's genome, you call it, the human genome. I think that is something that I would like it to happen in the near future, because now we hear a lot of researchers going into gene editing, and there are research teams that manage to grow sperm cells and egg cells out of skin cells. And these are great, but it's very difficult to pinpoint as to which one I would like it to be, because science can be misused sometimes. So for me, I would like to see an advance that would probably not disturb the embryo's genome without much micromanipulation, but at the same time would be able to give the couples the highest chance possible.
But with all this attention on gene editing now, is there enough research being done in that area, do you think?
There are research going on, definitely, but it's not really encouraging because there are a lot of ethical questions that being thrown into it. So where do we draw the line? Where do we even distinguish which disease or which gene you want to edit?
When it comes to fertility treatment, though, even that itself faced a lot of controversies in the early days. And yet, several decades later today, we can talk about it as part and parcel of medicine. What do you think changed to bring us, through this journey?
In the mid 20th century, there were many, many advances being discovered, and the technology was unstoppable. And when IVF became more accessible to people almost all over the world, and adoption became more and more difficult, so this has actually primed the couples to pin all their hopes into bringing up a child from birth due to a medical breakthrough. And after that, you can see that nobody seemed to think that it was possible until the late 1960s, 70s. Mm-hmm. And then the belief of this miracle cure, that exerted a lot of influence on the shape of the public opinions that, even in the discussions on infertility in the subsequent decades, it kind of shaped the way they think about it and became more acceptable to treatments like such.
So how is fertility treatment regulated in Malaysia? Because as you've correctly pointed out, there's a lot of frontier signs that we don't know how mm-hmm. they're going to pan out, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. ethics is a key concern here.
Yeah. So many countries in the West, they report to regulatory bodies like the Human Fertilization and Embryo Authority. We call it HFEA. Some report to the European Society. But many countries in the East, like Malaysia, we don't have a certain regulatory body. But we do have a special interest group in the medical council that had actually drafted guidelines to follow mm-hmm. In IVF mm-hmm. in Malaysia. And in Australia and New Zealand, and this is actually very good for countries like us because they have another special interest group that is charged by the board of the Fertility Society of Australia. Mm-hmm. And they actually came up with a audited code of practice, you know, mm-hmm. for IVF units. Mm-hmm. And they grant licenses to these IVF units only if they have passed all the compliance.
Mm-hmm.
So these were made available to international countries or outside of Australia and New Zealand. And Malaysia is actually one of the countries that are able to use this accreditation scheme mm-hmm. to get license to operate an IVF unit.
Okay. So coming back to World Embryology Day, 25th of July, mm-hmm. What would you say is the significance of this day to the fertility medicine community?
Mm. This date is actually the birth date of Louis Brown, the first IVF baby. Before we decided that this would be the date, actually, there was a group that actually asked all the embryologists all over the world or their opinion, which date would be the suitable one. And everybody thought, and most of us thought, that Louise Brown's birth date would be the most significant one.
Mm, yeah. Okay, all right. And so do you have a final message for this day that commemorates the field that you do and the promise that fertility treatment brings to people?
Mm. Well, to all the embryologists and the allied health professionals, like the doctors, the nurses who are involved in the couple's journey, I would like to wish them a very happy journey in helping them. And do not stop believing, because miracles do happen, you know. And for aspiring embryologists, I think I would like to tell them that it is not a fancy job, actually. It requires a lot of hard work and patience. But like I said, hard work comes before talent for some.
But is it a career worth going into?
Oh, yes. It's definitely, you know, you see results every day.
Mm.
You see every day is a totally different day. Every day you see miracles happening. When you thought that this couple would have the least chance of success, but they come back 9 months later and show you that baby that you have seen from day one. And the feeling is just euphoric.
Okay. Mm. Well, as we look forward to July 25th, happy World Embryology Day, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
We've been speaking to Lokmay Kew, an embryologist, looking at this field of embryology and its role in fertility treatment. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.